everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. In this episode of the show, I was lucky enough to again be joined by Drew Dinkmeyer and Michael Gallagher to go around the NBA and discuss some of the biggest things that are going on in the league right now that are relevant for daily fantasy, that are relevant for betting on NBA futures. In fact, we did talk quite extensively about the NBA futures market in this podcast, and also some important waiver wire stuff for seasonal leagues, really everything that you need to know if you are trying to profit off of the NBA right now, or if you just like to talk about the NBA and hear other people that you like talk about the National Basketball Association. Of course, we are sponsored by DailyRoto.com. You can get 10% off of the best projections, optimizers, and tools in the industry using the promo code Janis, J-A-N-I-S. You can also support the show by subscribing on Patreon, patreon.com/TakeCast. You get bonus episodes of the show and help, just help the podcast continue functioning as it does right now. And if you don't want to do any of that but still want to show some support, just please open your phone, go to iTunes, Google Play, wherever you do your reviews, leave a 5-star rating, leave a 5-star review. Very helpful, very useful. I will appreciate it very much. And now let's go ahead and get into the episode. All right, everyone, looping in Michael Gallagher and Drew Dinkmeyer. We are back for our Monday NBA podcast. We're going to run through the important topics du jour. We're going to let Drew tilt about his high-stakes season-long basketball teams and how frustrated it's making him. We're going to let Mike tout a bunch of young guys, and it's just going to be our normal show. But we were just talking about one of the most confounding things in the NBA right now, which is that Karl Anthony Towns has now been listed as questionable for, Mike, you said 13 games in a row.
I believe so, 13, yeah. Insane, man.
Clearly, they're being very, very genuine in their injury listing. I mean, yes, you know, the first 13 or so, he was right there. He was so close to playing.
Getting close. Game time. It's game time on Wednesday. Didn't even go game time.
Or Thursday. Would you guys like to hear my conspiracy theory for why they continue to list him as questionable and not doubtful or rule him out in
the
morning?
They want people to go to the games.
No, that's not it. They don't want to list him as out immediately or make it seem like he's super hurt because they're low-key like looking at trade packages, and they don't want
anybody that trades for Karl Anthony Towns does not care that he's going to miss 2 weeks.
You seem to think that NBA GMs and many people involved in personnel are making only logical decisions 100% of the time?
No, I think the reason that they're listing these guys as questionable is they want you to come to the game. They want you to plan your day around coming to the game, buying those tickets, and thinking you're going to see Karl Anthony Towns. And then an hour before the game, they're going to be like, he's out tonight. He's out again. Sorry.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with Drew. I've never really been into the whole conspiracy they're trying to trade him thing. And they did this last year with Robert Covington. They made him doubtful instead for like a month and a half, and it was super annoying. Now they're just doing it with Cat with questionable. But like this whole thing is just with the Bulls calling everyone probable and this whole Cat questionable thing, it just makes it so hard to kind of read the tea leaves on injury reports now, just because so many teams are following suit on like the AD probable thing is like, you know, he has his own like probable tag, you know. Wendell Carter Jr. used to have probable tag all the time. It's just been so annoying how certain players have specific kind of – in the Cat questionable thing, you know, there's just – we have to view each player in a separate instance. It's just been so annoying.
I was thinking about what the league could do to try to mandate this, but then it's going to – no matter what you come up with, it's going to get manipulated. Because the thing that I thought about was – that teams would have to, by the end of the year, get within a certain range of, like, a questionable guy would have to be, over the course of the season, their entire questionables listed would have to be in a range of, like, 40 to 60% playing or something like that. But what would end up happening is teams would just manipulate it at the very end of the year by listing a bunch of dudes to get into whatever the territory they need to without being fined. So there's just no good solution to this. I just wish it didn't matter. Like I wish that the transparency around the injury situation, I don't know what the calculation is on this, because I'm sure, you know, the short-term calculation is the amount of people that will go to the game and attend the game with the hopes of seeing the players that they want to see or whatever. But I don't know if the long-term equation is more people who are engaged in playing fantasy and playing DFS and different things where they feel like they have a good experience and they know like how to set their lineups and different things. I don't know if that creates more long-term fans. I can't imagine you could even really sell or individual organizations on that when they're trying to hit bottom line targets immediately. But it's a very frustrating situation to deal with from a fantasy perspective.
Yeah, and then I always talk about Ryan Arcidiacono being probable all the time. Doesn't even play, and like even the Bulls beat reporters don't even mention it. But you look on the NBA official injury report, and he's probable with the elbow thing. Like every single game, it's like, what are you doing? So I don't know. I've been saying the last month or so that I think that the NBA should follow suit in the NFL and just ditch the probable tag. Like if so the guys are really probable, like even like AD was probable 2 weeks. I'm sorry, Giannis was probable 2 weeks ago. And then suddenly downgraded doubtful. Like, why not just list them questionable, you know?
Well, so I think that's the team making their own mistake. The problem that the problem that I've had with the NFL moving away from the probable tag and is that they have incentive to list anyone with an injury, because if you don't list someone with an injury and you get caught, you get fined. So the smallest thing gets listed as questionable now, and it's very hard to decipher who is actually questionable and who would just be probable. And so like, I actually like having the probable tag. I recognize it's a lot more work to like type out and like report on and all these things. And it's super annoying and it's daily. So you have to do it all the time. But from actually knowing where the player stands in terms of probability to play, I actually like it quite a bit. And I miss it in the NFL because there's so many times where it feels like this weekend, there were a bunch of guys in the NFL playoffs that were listed as questionable that I think if we had the probable tag, they would have been listed as probable. Like I think, and it would have at least given some clarity as to how close they are. Whereas like Mark Ingram might've been truly questionable, but Travis Kelce was always probable. Yeah. And so I kind of miss it from that perspective, but it is a nuisance when you're having to report on this stuff on a daily basis. And, you know, these teams are playing 3 or 4 games a week and you're having to repeat the same ones. The guys who are questionable and are the guys who have been probable for 3 months with the same injury, I don't understand. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's just got to go away.
Just don't list them.
Yeah.
Are they like never healthy? I don't understand.
Oh, yeah, I don't get it. Especially because someone so insignificant is Arcidiacono. Like, yeah. It's the one particular thing. We always talk about it at Roto World when we're trying to like write up probable guys. Like, why are we even doing this? It's so pointless.
Yeah,
but it's like you said, it's kind of like no real.
But I guess as we're recording now, Kat's already been ruled out tonight, so that's
yep.
So that at least the questionable to out went happened a little bit earlier.
Yeah, well, he's sick now, so they actually ruled him out for the not knee thing, and they said Alan Horton is great. The radio play-by-play guy had mentioned he was sick too, so on Saturday, so he was illness and knee on Saturday when he sat out. And
that Davis Matic Midwestern flu that's killing everybody.
Dude, it's like claiming people's lives, bro. It's pretty intense out here. So to shift a little bit away from conspiracy positive theories stuff. And injury reporting, yeah. And some positive stuff. I'm very excited to talk about the Grizzlies, who
yes.
this podcast is long. Ja Morant, Brandon Clark, Kyle Anderson specifically for Drew, just really this young core of players overall. So Mike, talk to me about the Grizzlies on-court performance kind of over the last 2 weeks since Ja returned from injury.
Yeah, 5-game winning streak, second in pace over the 5-game winning streak, second in offense, third in net rating, 11th in defense. Just overall, Ja has been just awesome. His shot selection's been improved. He's shooting, he's still turning the ball over a lot. But he's just been – in January, he's at 19 points, 9 dimes, 4.5 turnovers. He's getting – he's shooting 75% at the rim this month. He's 20 drives per game. That's like kind of like league-leading kind of stuff. He's shooting well off drives. He's just been just dominating on the offensive side. And then Jaren Jackson Jr. has been lights out. They've really been the two keys to their first unit. And obviously Valanciunas went off yesterday. But, yeah, Jaren Jackson, last 16, he's at 20 points, 1.8 blocks, 3.5 steals. It's, like, insane combination to do that. He's been 14th and 9 cat over that 16-game stretch for the season-long people. But, yeah, they're just playing such a fun brand of basketball. And DeAnthony Melton has been just such a stalwart on defense. I've mentioned this all the time. Like, he makes bad players look horrible. and good players look average. He's been a total stat stuffer, a guy that everyone wants to play more. Over his last 10, he's at 19 per 36. He's at 19.8, 5.2 dimes, 2.7 steals, 1.2 blocks. Like, if this guy gets 30 minutes, he's a fantasy stud. But he and Ja have just been such a great tandem over the win streak. They're plus 40.6 in their 38 minutes together. That's the best among any NBA duo, with 36 minutes played in each of their five games, playing at a 113 pace as well. So, playing great on defense at that pace is really hard to do. And it really started, if you remember, a couple Saturdays ago when they beat down the Clippers in a day game, and Doc Rivers had said that they had better alarm clocks than they did when they whooped them. So, yeah, it's just been so fun. Their starters have been great, plus 18 over the win streak. So, yeah, they have one of the best young nucleuses in the NBA. Nuclei.
Yeah. So, Drew, how impressed have you been with Ja Morant thus far?
I mean, kind of everything that you wanted and hoped for with Ja. I think the big thing, as Mike alluded to, is just the shot selection, in terms of just relentlessly attacking the rim and getting good looks, not only for himself, but for teammates as well, has really, you know, one of the things that it used to take a while for guys to come into the league and kind of develop is that, you know, that Mike Conley-esque floater. And we've seen it back in style in Memphis this year with Ja Morant. He's even figured that out, along with his ability to attack the rim. So I love watching this team. And, you know, this was the team that I think Mike and I both identified in the preseason as kind of our league pass team this year that we were excited to watch, mostly because they had a lot of young talent that we were interested in, but we also thought they were going to play a fast, fun brand of basketball. And they're not only doing all those things, they're playing well. And I think it's such an interesting and exciting time for Memphis basketball, because they're probably a half year ahead where you would have expected. Like, I kind of expected them to start playing like this maybe towards the last month of this season, and then next year kind of really contend for a playoff spot. But they're, in my opinion, I think this is going to be the ace seed in the West. Mm-hmm. I think they're the best team. I think they're also built the best to withstand injuries, because they're a very deep team and they're not playing their starters crazy minutes. So, and they're young. So I think this team is really, really fun. I would be thrilled to watch an April playoff series, even though knowing they're probably getting swept by the Lakers or whatever. That would be super fun. Like, this is going to be the team that I think is going to be the next version of the Denver Nuggets, where you just look through the roster. There's no bad players. There's lots of good, young, intriguing talent. I think their player depth pool in terms of young talent is a little bit better than what Denver started with, even though Denver, I think, had the better ceiling player with Jokic, because Murray's kind of stalled out there, and so is Gary Harris a little bit. And so I'm really excited to see Memphis keep going forward. I love Jaren Jackson Jr., kind of the modern big that can protect the rim, stretch it out, shooting 40%+ from three. Love everything that Brandon Clark does. I'm super excited, and I'm interested to see how they handle the Valanciunas situation in the offseason and going forward, just because it's very clear that the future of this team is Morant, Clark, and Jaren Jackson Jr.
And one of the things I want to add,
Clark is such a baller.
Clark's so good. I just wanted to add, Dylan Brooks has like the funniest win-loss splits ever. He has in the 18 wins, he has 20 points per game on 61 shooting, and then in the losses, 10 points per game on 43 true shooting. It's like the weirdest thing. But yeah, Brandon Clark, dude, he's so fun. He's like the master of the 5 to 10 foot little floater. He does that so well, and he's just like, for as rough as he was early in his college career, to be kind of almost polished as a rookie for what he does it so well. And like you said, he's just such a good fit, and just really switchable, and just a great combination with I just can't wait for, like, we're almost like rooting for Valanciunas to kind of like lose minutes as great as he's played, because we want to see that Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr. front court. But yeah, there's just so much to like.
Definitely. I think a very interesting thing. This is a question I will pose to both of you. You can have the Pelicans roster, so sight unseen with Zion, some of their young guys, and not a super great cap situation, you know, not the best cap situation, but like not a horrible one either. Or you can have this Grizzlies situation, and we've seen Ja, we've seen Morant, we've seen DeAnthony Melton, Dylan Brooks, some of these younger guys. Which one do you take, Mike?
I think it's probably got to be – I mean, you would probably say Morant and Zion are, like, almost a push right now. I don't know if that's a stretch or not. But, yeah.
And I mean, after so, that, like, I having not seen Zion play, I think you have to.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, like, it's going to be hard to see him playing 75 games in a season where Ja got shut down, but that was kind of precautionary. He had the offseason surgery. So, yeah, I think I would probably take Memphis, as great as Brandon Ingram's been playing. And Jackson Hayes has been phenomenal, by the way, too. So, he's probably – him and Brandon Clark are kind of in a similar tier as far as like maybe a solid number three player on a big man on a team.
Hated that Jackson Hayes pick. I remember it because I don't really do the NBA draft, right? But I just remember people hating on the Jackson Hayes pick because they didn't think that he and Zion were going to be able to play together.
Yeah. It's close though, but yeah, just with the whole uncertainty around Zion, I think that Morant is, you know, he's really good. I wouldn't say I was down on him, but he's been better than I thought he was going to be, especially lately.
What do you think, Drew?
I'm trying to look through the because I assume you're talking not only just the roster but the hoard of
cap situation and everything.
Yeah, their timeline, and just to add to it, their timeline is like. Well, but better put together where they're gonna have to play Ingram a lot. The Pelicans, they're gonna like Drew Holiday. Yeah. We don't know if he's gonna be around. So I think, and I mentioned this all offseason too. Like they actually have a plan now. For years, they were like, okay, we'll just kind of figure it out. But now they actually have a plan. I love that.
Yeah, I think too.
I think I would lean Memphis, but New Orleans just has so many picks, and I'm looking at Memphis's pick situation. I guess they don't have their pick for this year. It would go to the Celtics, it looks like.
Oh, yeah. That's like top
six protected. Yeah. So they're probably not going to have a first-round pick this year. And then I think their pick then I think they might have a pick that defers beyond that from the Jazz. So, like, their pick situation, they don't have a ton to add via the draft in the immediate, but they really don't need it. They don't really need much. Yeah. They could use – like one really standout wing player at some point, which is really hard to get in free agency. Those guys just don't come around. But I mean, the Morant, Jaren Jackson, Clark, you've got the one and the 4 or 5 kind of locked up for a while. And I think Melton is showing good enough strides that you could have him as a combo guard with Morant. And then you just need wings. I'd probably take Memphis's situation. I think the pieces fit pretty well. And I think the Zion, while I think Zion will be an incredibly impactful player pretty much immediately once he steps on the floor, I do question how all of the pieces fit. And obviously, as Mike alluded to, having to potentially pay Ingram and then what you do with Drew and whatnot. New Orleans definitely has more outs to building a really incredible roster, but I think it's just more of an unknown.
Nikhil Alexander-Walker's been a little bit of a letdown too, I'll add. He had the ridiculous Super League. It was a little bit – he had an okay preseason, a little bit better.
Everyone at Daily Roto knows that Nikhil Alexander-Walker's had some rough results in his short NBA career because Ricky Sanders is just like, oh, no, he's like probably like a 35 usage rate guy. So every time one of the guards are out and he's going to get big minutes, he just always is showing up in the optimizer. So moving on, big question for you, Drew. Daniel Gafford, NBA player, true or false?
I mean, yeah, he's an NBA player, but he's an NBA player that's a center, which means, you know, unless you're a unbelievable rim protector and can switch on the pick and roll, you're just a guy. So he's just a guy. Like, he's fine. He's an NBA player. He will probably put up decent fantasy stats. One of the guys that I will tilt about later when talking about my NFBKC team, but he'll probably put up decent fantasy stats the next 4 to 6 weeks. The Bulls will be way worse defensively because I think Wendell Carter Jr. has really masked a ton of their issues. Him and Chris Dunn as a defensive tandem have really helped the Bulls defense be pretty good. I think Gafford will not be able to protect the rim the way Wendell Carter Jr. does, nor will he be as switchable kind of on the perimeter as Wendell Carter Jr. So I think the Bulls will lose that from a perspective. I would expect Zach LaVine's production to pick up dramatically just because I think Gafford's going to be a better screener than Wendell Carter Jr. And I think he'll get more looks that way. But yeah, Gafford will come in for the next 3-4 weeks. He'll play fine. Luke Kornet will get some minutes. He'll play fine. From a fantasy perspective, those guys will put up some numbers. And when they're cheap in daily fantasy, there will be opportunities to play them. But I think he's just a guy. I don't think he's anything that's, you know, shifting the future of the franchise.
Another good summer league guy. He had really one of the better, I'd say him and Carson Edwards and a couple other guys just had like really big summer leagues for second round picks. But yeah, like you said, and even the first start he had, he was running around like he had all the energy in the world, and you could see at the end of his first stint, he was just done.
Yeah.
So it'll take some time for him to adjust to the bigger minutes. But yeah, like you said, he's gonna have a pretty good block rate. Not the best rebounder, but he's going to get a lot of dunks. He had, I think, like 4 or 5 dunks and a half before we had the start when Rendell Carter got hurt. He's been pretty solid. So, definitely a guy who I added in a bunch of leagues, especially deeper leagues. It's hard to pick up centers. So I think he's going to be pretty good. He's going to probably shoot mid-60s from the field. Obviously not a good
fit,
but, blocks are gold, so.
I'm trying to think of a good comp for him, and I don't really have a good one because I think he's not traditional center size, but he's a really good roll man in the pick and roll. He dives really hard. He's pretty active, as you said. He like moves around quite a bit, but he's just a little bit undersized. So he's got like the statistical profile of some of these dudes who are like Capella types in a much lighter sense.
Right.
But he's not as impactful on the court because he's just not as big. So I don't have a really good comp for him, but I think he'll put up really good field goal percentage numbers, almost like a Willie Cauley-Stein type, although Willie Cauley-Stein's a little bit bigger from a height perspective.
Probably be better in block rate too, I think.
Yeah. So I think like that type of player is kind of what he is, which is fine. Totally fine in the NBA, but there's just so many
centers that – Drew, why do the Bulls just want to kill Lauri Markkanen? Like, why is every, like he gets an ankle injury and they're like, you got to play, and he gets like a heart condition and they're like, all right, 48 minutes in overtime. Like, why do they want him to die?
I mean, this has long been the Bulls' thing, you know, back to the Thibodeau days. But I think a lot of people assume that was just a Tibbs only thing, and I really think it's an organizational thing. You know, John Paxson and Gar Foreman are kind of, you know, hard guys, and they hired a guy in Jim Boylan who wants to be kind of like a tough guy as well. And their thought process is you just keep working harder and harder and harder. And if you're hurt, you just work through it. And there's a lot of sports science that would suggest this is insane and stupid, but they don't really care much for science. So it's just the way the Bulls
are. They do hate science. It's true.
We've talked about this before, but you know, the Bulls literally cleared Luol Deng to play in a game where he had a leg fracture. Like he had a fractured leg, and their training staff cleared him to play. And then they almost screwed up a spinal tap with him and almost killed him. Like they do not have the greatest reputation around the league in terms of taking care of their players.
They're probably the Gettleman of the front of the NBA front office.
you don't love to see that.
They're probably pretty close. Although I will say, like this offseason, I thought they finally made some sharp moves in terms of it was weird. They've always drafted pretty well. Like they've always drafted generally like pretty good players. But this year, I didn't think they drafted very well. And then I thought that like Gafford's fine. Gafford was a good pick, but I thought Coby White was like a pick that just has no upside for the pick that you're taking him at. Like his best case
You're drafting a six man. Like
yeah, his best case scenario is Lou Williams. Yeah, in the top 10 of the draft. Like you're doing it just because you don't know about other dudes. So I thought they drafted poorly, but I thought the Thaddeus Young move made a lot of sense. I thought Satoransky was a great pickup for them for what they were trying to accomplish. But I think they did all of this with, you know, cheaping out on the coach. Basically they have Boylan because they were paying him at like an assistant levels rate when they fired Hoiberg, and they just were like, we're not going to pay two coaches at one time. And they've lost a lot of close games this year, lost a lot of games in the fourth quarter where they've had big leads. And I think a lot of that is due to really ineffective coaching. And I think this is why, a lot of people were probably higher on the roster than what's come of it this year. I think the roster is still okay. I think Lauri playing poorly has really, really hurt things. But I think they're just ridiculously poorly coached.
You guys are both wrong about who the Gettleman of the NBA is, though. The Gettleman of the NBA also lives in New York, and his name is James Dolan. Though I guess he's an owner and not a general manager.
He's the owner, yeah.
Who is the Knicks general manager right now?
Scott Mills. Perry?
Mills and Perry. Yeah, yeah.
Mills and Perry. I mean, that whole organization, like, whatever, they're all the Gettlemans.
When the trade rumors popped up, was it last week with the Drummond stuff? I was like, Knicks.
No offense. I'm not trying to rip anybody, but the reporter that had that has had some off-the-wall stuff before. It was just kind of spoofed him, I think. Like,
oh, I'm sure. Well, I'm sure it was, but it's one of these things that sometimes I feel like you know, teams obviously manipulate the media to float stuff out there to see like what fan interest would be and whatnot. And I kind of feel like, you know, that one could have been spoon fed from Drummond's agent as well, just like trying to garner more interest. But it wouldn't surprise me if that was spoon fed from the Knicks too, just to see. And then they like kind of react. But yeah, the Knicks that off season, I know. Like a lot of my closest friends are Knicks fans. And I mean, they are just so tortured as a fan base that they really have they have no logical perspective. I actually got a text this morning from my friend that said, it might be too small a sample size to get excited about, but RJ Barrett went 8-for-10 from the free throw line last night and is shooting over 70% over his last 20 games. Maybe there's something here. These people are tortured people. They're tortured people. They have.
I mean, imagine looking at RJ Barrett as like the light. Imagine RJ Barrett being the light, Drew.
But like knowing they know basketball. This is the thing about Knicks fans. They know basketball.
Yeah, they know basketball. It's just a torture chamber.
They understand what things are going wrong, but they're so beaten down and they're trying so hard to like figure out what the bright light is. They'll take anything, man. So they know that RJ Barrett not making free throws is a problem, and that's a problem for like a high usage wing player, and that's very indicative of players likely not being successful at the NBA level in terms of efficient scoring. They realize all this and they're still like focused on like, oh, maybe it's coming around, maybe it's coming around, maybe he's figuring it out. They are, I feel so badly, but like this offseason my Knicks fans friends were like, oh yeah, like, you know, at least they didn't spend a bunch of money on guys that are going to be there for the future. And, you know, they can trade these guys at the deadline. I'm like, no, they can't trade these guys. Like,
yeah, they're not going to get
anything trading. Nobody's trading for Bobby Portis. Like this isn't what's happening. And they're like, well, you know, at least we won't be terrible. I'm like, oh no, you're going to be quite terrible. None of these guys play defense. They don't pass the ball, and they all play the same position. This is a horrible idea. It's going to be a very, very bad team. And they're like, well, you know, at least.
But other than that, it's fine though.
Hey, they beat the Heat, man.
They did.
Yeah,
they did.
Yeah,
they
that was
playing better.
They had two terrible losses lately.
To Mike Miller's credit, they've been playing better. Mike Miller seems to understand not only modern players, but understands like a little bit more about how to use guys. But all these guys that they signed, you know, has limited the playing time for Mitchell Robinson, which is probably the thing that they should be most interested in figuring out what they have.
How surprised were you when you guys learned that the Mike Miller coaching the Knicks is not the former long-haired Miami Heat Mike Miller? Because I assumed when I read Mike Miller that that was the former basketball player Mike Miller, and I was 27 years old when I found out it wasn't.
Nice. I mean, I knew that he was a G League coach, so I kind of knew, but yeah.
Was he a player too? Like, I've literally, before he got hired as the Knicks head coach, I've never heard his name before, and I like know several assistant head coaches. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So I'm not a total idiot.
The story would be,
I mean, no, it was pretty popular. A lot of people did that. I saw people on Twitter all over the place were like, oh, Mike Miller. Yeah.
The story would be cooler if it was Mike
Miller. Oh, for sure.
Played for the Heat. And
yeah.
Played everywhere.
Yeah, the in on
speaking
that.
Of Mike Miller, who did play for this team, the Cavs apocalypse. What is going on in this building? First of all, seems like this coach is just bad, and he should probably be gone. But I mean, they're like Sexton and Garland don't like each other, and Kevin Love hates everybody. Like LeBron left this place just in a state of disarray, the likes of which we've never seen before. It's crazy, Mike.
Yeah, it's really bad. I'll take the positive side of it. I think Garland and Sexton are both playing a little bit better.
Yeah, they are.
For Garland, he's at 16 and 5 assists on 48 from the field, 36 from 3, 84 from the line. So he's almost flirting with 50-40-90 over that 8-game stretch. And also, Sexton's been better too, 22 points per game over his last 10. He's shooting 66% of his shots in the paint. Shooting better from three lately, so that's a positive. But the whole Beeline thing last week, oh my God, like it couldn't, the timing couldn't have come worse. Tristan Thompson had a big game after that, had a career high, first 30-point game of his career, like 600 game. But and they had a big win too. They beat Denver. I mean, it's kind of – the on-court stuff's been kind of better. They're not playing terrible right now, but, I mean, without going too deep like that, that's just if he said that, I don't even know how you have a slip of the tongue like that. But it's neither here nor there, I guess. But, it kind of is what it is. They have to make some trades. They'll unload some guys. Larry Nance being hurt kind of is a buzzkill. But and then Kevin Porter Jr., who was really starting to play well, him getting hurt was really – like you mentioned about the Knicks, like that was one of the bright spots. It's like, whoa, we may have got a steal in Kevin Porter Jr., who's been really one of the best non-lottery picks so far, I thought. But, yeah, other than that, like it's going to be a mess. We'll see what they can get for Kevin Love or see what they could do. I don't think they'll get anything for Tristan Thompson, but and like we said this before, the reports were that the Cavs want a first, and they also are hearing that they have to give a first to get off Love's contract. So it's definitely not going to be easy for them to rework their roster. And they haven't – and, I mean, what are they going to do? They have LeBron, and then all of a sudden he bolts. Like, it's going to be tough to kind of reset your plan after that happens. So it's they have a built-in excuse, but, yeah, it's definitely going to be pretty messy for the Knicks. They're going to be one of the worst teams in the NBA for the next 3 or 4 years.
I think one of the challenges when you have two young ball dominant guards is I think the growing pains are even harder than a lot of other teams because you can't get into the flow of consistent offense as these guys are kind of piling up reps of just learning how to run an NBA offense. And if you look at what their guard situation has been the last few years, with the exception of kind of a brief stint with George Hill, it's basically been ball dominant score first oriented guards with Sexton, Clarkson, now Garland. And I think that takes a toll on the rest of the development of other players because they're not getting kind of normal NBA sets. And then you bring in a college coach who runs a little bit of a different offense as well. And so I think it's just been kind of a challenge developmentally. They have been playing better, especially Garland. I think he's shown some of the more traditional point guard oriented skills that is pretty intriguing. We all knew when LeBron left that it was going to be a long road to hoe for this team. And it certainly appears it's going to be that way. But I feel like, you know, there's a lot of intangibles that teams will look for with veteran presence and stuff like that. Sometimes I think kind of a veteran ball handler can just help a young team like get into sets correctly and with the right amount of time on the clock and give time for players to develop a little bit better under normal conditions that I think a slew of young kind of score first guards can be challenging to work through.
I think that makes sense. All right, we're pulling in the trade machine right now, or we can just make stuff up. These don't have to exactly fit under the cap rules, but I will pull up the trade machine. Dink, what is your favorite possible trade right now? Does one come to mind?
I mean, for me, because apparently Christian Wood is only going to have fantasy value if Andre Drummond is moved. I just want Andre Drummond moved to Atlanta like as quickly as possible. So we can unlock Christian Wood because I'm just sitting on this gold mine of fantasy potential that he's only apparently playing backup center to Drummond now. And it's like the worst possible thing. He's playing backup center to Drummond while sharing the floor with Thon Maker, who plays the actual center spot. So his rotation is cut short because it's only minutes behind Drummond, and his usage is cut short because he's like sprawling out the 3-point line. So I, you know, for my own personal investment purposes, I'd like Andre Drummond shipped to Atlanta as quickly as possible.
I had the same thought, the exact same thought. Yeah, so we saw, like you mentioned, on Saturday, he went for 17, 14, three blocks, yeah, steal, and yeah, just 26 minutes when Drummond got ejected. There is some overlap with him and Drummond, but it's very little where it's really cutting into his fantasy upside. And I mean, there's really nothing that really strikes me as far as like maybe like a Chris Paul trade so I could see more SGA on ball. Something like that, but
they're not doing it though, man. They're yeah, just like, so, you know what,
good.
We're good.
They're, yeah, too
good. We're making the playoffs. Like,
I
they're,
agree.
They're
I don't
like
think they're going to. But yeah,
how crazy is that, dude?
Or even something crazy like Drew Holiday to Denver would be pretty cool. Especially this Gary Harris thing, if he's hurt, we'll see what happens with that.
Oh, I want to talk. I just like 3 minutes on Michael Porter Jr. Like, it was really cool at first. He came in and he was awesome, hit a bunch of shots, and then he's been really disappointing since then. Like, is it just like an adjustment curve? How has he looked to you, Drew?
Yeah, I think there's going to be an adjustment curve. I think the challenge is with any of these young players who their first taste of playing, especially if they're like scoring dominant ball dominant players, their first taste of the NBA will often come through garbage time, or it'll come through like reserve rotations. And those are going to be easier minutes for these players to do what they normally do. Then I think Porter was kind of inserted into the starting lineup. He's asked to play with starters a little bit more, which, you know, with Jokic shouldn't be that hard of a transition, but it's better if you're a cutter and you're not as ball dominant. And so I think Porter's struggling to find kind of his fit without the ball in his hands. And I think that's where he can be really, really interesting with the Jokic lineups. But I just don't think he's got that mentality yet, because he's just been used to playing with the ball in his hands quite a bit. I do have a trade machine that I just put together that I would like to send off.
Let's hear it.
We talked about how I think Derek Favors should be more heavily targeted. How about this one? What do you guys think of Boston sending Gordon Hayward to the Pelicans for Derek Favors and JJ Redick?
What? Pretty crazy.
You think that would work or no? You think they should just stick with Tice?
Why do they want Favors over Cantor and Tice? Like, I don't understand the logic on thinking that's that big of an upgrade.
I think Favors is a huge upgrade over Cantor and Tice, personally.
Yeah, I agree. And they do kind of have a surplus there.
And they're good. And think about like their basic line, their playoff lineups, right, are going to be Tatum, Brown, Kemba, whoever's starting at center, and then Smart or Hayward. And they'll rotate those guys around or whatnot. But then you can also with Redick, you get kind of that added shooting component, which they have a lot of guys who are willing to take threes, and they can space out the floor very well because they play, you know, a lot of kind of four out type sets, but they could have kind of that offensive component as well. I think the challenge that they're going to run into in the playoffs is their center platoon situation is going to get exploited in the playoffs. You need somebody who can play both sides in the playoffs if you're really going to be a championship level team. And teams are going to pick apart Cantor defensively like they always have. And teams are going to and Tice is just a guy who's going to get himself in foul trouble against, you know, Embiid or they've done okay against Giannis, but I think ultimately like that's going to be a struggle for them. I think Favors shores up a lot of that.
They definitely need, that's what they're going to, I mean, it seems pretty obvious. We talked about Rashawn Holmes is like kind of like a pipe dream for them.
I like that better. I like that. I like adding a more dynamic athlete as opposed to adding Favors, who is just like center Gordon Hayward.
Favors is good, man.
I'm not saying especially he's not good. Yeah. I think Favors is really good, but like when I think of dynamic athlete, can create plays in and of his own. And like, I do not think of Derek Favors.
Yeah, I'm with you. But that's definitely like, they have plenty of ammo to do it. I know that Zach Lowe and other people seem to think that Marcus Smart, and like, it always made sense to trade Marcus Smart given how they kind of built through the draft with Edwards and Romeo Langford, and they drafted a lot of guards. So you would think that would be a better fit.
Just Smart is so integral to what they do though.
For sure.
Like, he's so, especially come playoff time.
You just want the Celtics to have another Al Horford. You're just like so addicted to like the Al Horford.
I do love Al Horford.
Like, it's just like Al Horford is like he's like the extra 2% of NBA players. It's like he's not athletic, he's not dynamic at all. He doesn't score wins when he's on the court.
If they're gonna do a smaller move, what they should do is they should go back and get Aaron Baines.
Yeah.
I don't know why they let Aaron Baines go in the first place.
To save cap space, right? Or something.
I mean, he's making like 1 year five and a half.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Yeah, it feels
what if, what if, what if they just went for Frank instead?
No.
I'd love to see that. Stop it. How much would a white, like, tall center get love in Boston, though? Like, he'd be like the new, like, their new, like, mascot.
You're aware that Aaron Baines is white.
Isn't he Australian though? That doesn't really count.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
Okay.
Dink, this is just this is just science, dude.
I don't understand. I don't understand you guys. Yeah, I don't understand.
But everyone, I'm pretty sure Kaminsky is Polish, so that's just gonna go A plus in Boston.
He trolls the Cubs all the time too, so that would probably go over well with Boston.
True. Well, I mean, but isn't the answer to the Boston Sent like their rotation? Isn't it just like Time Lord like not being hurt anymore and realizing his ceiling?
No, I don't. I don't think it's going to get there quick enough for him.
Yeah.
At least to be playing big playoff minutes. I think the answer that they're going to have is Theis. Like they've been very effective with Theis at the five. Yeah. But I think the challenge with Theis is going to be playoff time. Especially in the Embiid matchup. The Embiid matchup is just a really bad one for them now without Horford, without Baines.
Yeah. I think that the answer would be to, like, I don't think, like I was trying to say, like getting off, they have to almost get off Time Lord if they really want to make a push for a big man that they could use, you know? Because I think that most people feel that Time Lord still has big potential. I always talk about that game against the Spurs when he was ridiculous. Just to show his ceiling, but when they won by like 35 or whatever it was, he was just ridiculous. But that's pretty much what it comes down to. Are you willing to cut Time Lord for a trade to go get somebody? Because a lot of teams would be.
Why would you? I mean, no, dude, you got to have the long eye. Like you can't cut Time Lord. He's so good.
Yeah, I agree.
His upside is so good.
But if they're gonna get somebody who's gonna be an impactful center, what else? Because I don't know if giving up Hayward's the answer. I think Hayward's playing pretty well.
Oh yeah, he's playing fine. It's just hard to like they have nothing to trade from an asset standpoint, contract wise.
Yeah,
besides Time Lord. Well, no, but he doesn't make that much money.
Oh, okay, yeah. For like, yeah. Well, I mean, they can figure out the rest of it. Like,
so, but no, the guys that they have that make big money are all the guys that you wouldn't want to trade. So it's Kemba, it's Hayward, it's Smart. Like everybody else makes like $1 million, $2 million. So to get somebody big, they have to trade one of those guys, which is why you could do something really small, like the Holmes stuff or like Baines or whatever. Yeah. And you can move those pieces around. But to get like a Favors or a Drummond or anybody like that, they would have to give up Smart or Hayward.
Yeah.
I guess. Okay. Another.
Actually, real quick, we never really get to wrap up on Porter Jr. So if you remember, back when he had that 25-point game in Indy that Saturday, it was like, oh, Mike Malone, he's going to be the first perimeter guy off the bench. He's going to play 25 minutes a game. Since then, hasn't hit 25 minutes at all. Only played 12 minutes in that one game. Just totally losing playing time. I mean, he had a pretty good game on Sunday. But, dude, yeah, it's rough. It's been. I know a lot of people in fantasy are pretty annoyed. But now that Gary Harris has been banged up, we'll probably see a little more Porter Jr., so definitely kind of put up or shut up time, but I don't
there's
think
gonna be a, there's going to be a path, and they have every incentive during the second half of the season to figure out how well he can develop with the starters. You know what I mean? Because they're going to be good enough that they're going to have, you know, a top four seed. They should be thinking, okay, what are the paths that we get to being a legit title contender? And one of the paths is Michael Porter Jr. being a really good player and a part of their rotation. And so I think they'll have every reason to try to figure it out. They know what they have from everybody else on that roster.
Add that Jamal Murray, Monty Morris lineups have been pretty good lately too. Monty Morris is really good.
Monty Morris is really good. I'm concerned because I really thought Jamal Murray was like kind of the key to this whole thing. I thought he was going to be Dame. Like I thought a year or two ago, I thought this guy was going to be Dame. Like he was ahead of Dame or similar to Dame at a younger age in terms of the years in the league, in terms of his production. And he just has taken zero steps forward the last 2 years.
Yep.
And yeah,
like he went to the line a lot yesterday, but the free throw rate's not up. And
they paid him early.
Yep.
And so that's the risk in paying those guys early. It's going to put them in a bad spot. Like their window is much shorter than I think people think, because unless Murray's development is not linear, but right now we haven't seen improvement in the last year year plus, 2 years of
hey man, at least Jokic is good again though. Like they, yeah, like Jokic's it just turned out Jokic needed to play himself into shape like Shaq used to do.
We knew that.
We were a little worried. I was worried about him a little bit.
I was worried. You weren't worried because you're a true believer. But I thought Jokic just like losing some of his athleticism was a big deal.
I mean, he doesn't like his the athleticism that he has. He didn't lose. He just looked slow and fat. But his athleticism is not his speed. His athleticism is his court vision and his creativity and his shooting and that stuff. Like that's not going to go away because of his physique. Like, so yeah, he's right.
I mean, if he got to a certain point of fatness, it would have.
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. Did you kind of
athleticism?
Did you not have the relationship with your dad where, like, you know, at like 45, your dad was still schooling you in the driveway? Like,
no, I mean, he would still own me, but my dad is he's taller than me, a lot taller.
Yeah.
So tough scenes, as the kids say there.
I'll add Jamal Murray's played a lot better lately, though.
The last three weeks
he's been good.
We need it, Jamal. I would love because I had so much confidence that he was going to be great. I would love to see it happen, but it just has not happened for the last year and a half. So hopefully it is coming.
It's coming. Drew Dinkmeyer. Okay. Out of the top four teams, Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, and Rockets are top four in title odds right now. Who do you guys like best to win the NBA championship? Because, and you guys can feel free to correct this take if you would like. I actually feel like for the first time that I can remember since 2009, so basically about as long as I've been involved in professionally or semi-professionally covering sports, The really feels like there are maybe 10 teams that could actually theoretically win the NBA championship. Where are you at with the title race right now, Drew?
10? You're out of your mind.
Yeah, it's not 10. I was going to jump on you for that.
I'll pull it up right now and I will tell you guys, and maybe this can be the segment. I will.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll go through the list.
Give a yes or no.
Okay. Let me pull up the futures market real quick. Okay. Championship winner, Lakers. Plus 300 basically without juice.
Yeah, that's
easy. Obviously.
Yeah.
Clippers,
yeah,
obviously.
Yes, yep. Those two teams can win the title. Yes. Yep.
Bucks, obviously.
Yes.
Rockets. I think no.
I think no.
That's a stretch. Sure. I think it's possible, but it's a stretch.
No.
James Harden is very good.
James Harden's incredible. Yeah. James Harden's incredible. They if they trade Westbrook for CP3, yes.
Okay, all right, whatever. The Philadelphia 76ers, I mean, they were a bounce away from being in the championship last year.
Yes.
I think clearly, yeah. Yes. I think the 76ers, by the way, are a great matchup for the Bucks because their defense is so good.
Yep.
The Boston Celtics, I think the Boston Celtics can win.
No.
No.
What if they trade for Derek Favors?
Yes.
Yes.
You literally think if they just got an above-average center?
That means they had to get through pretty much. They had to beat the Bucks and the Sixers. It's going to be really hard for that team
to be able to beat those two teams. They cannot have platoon centers. They can't.
What I'm hearing you say is that the Kyrie Irving led Celtics were actually a better team. That Kyrie's actually good and contributes to winning basketball.
The Al Horford led Celtics were a better team. I agree. I also would like to note that Kyrie made his triumphant return last night and got the Nets off of a big losing streak. I think it was a great. Well, I guess it wasn't a losing streak. They won the game before.
Listen, after two games ago, but yeah.
Yeah, I commend Kyrie for correctly identifying the return date of a Sunday game against the Hawks. You can't be better than that. You can't find a better spot on the schedule than that. Well done, Kyrie.
What a difference a week makes, man. Like last Saturday, it was like, oh my God, he's out for the season. He can't even get his arms up to shoot the ball.
He saw the Hawks coming up on the schedule.
Yeah. Unreal, man. I was total about face. I know a lot of people are like, oh, do I drop Kyrie Irving? You obviously can't do that, but I did not see that. I thought he'd be out to the brick for sure. So I was for sure wrong about that one. But yeah, it's great to see him back. And Be fun to see this whole Dinwiddie Kyrie starting next to each other thing. I think that'd be pretty cool. Although I could see LeVert start, given that I'm
All right, who's after the Celtics, Davis, in your 10-team list?
So I disagree with seven? That's
six. I think that's seven teams. I think that's – is that six teams, and we've approved four?
Yeah, well, you guys are wrong about the Rockets, though.
I said Houston's okay. Think Houston's okay.
Like, so Dink, you're just – Dink, you're just
I just think it's possible. Because, I mean, if Harden gets hot – and Westbrook's been playing great lately – and if Capella has to get healthy, obviously this heel thing.
I mean, I just the, like let the Drew. The problem. Drew the problem, just wants to go after the narratives. That's all. Right. Drew loves the narratives. The problem that Westbrook's is bad.
So I think the problem is that every year you get further out, and this was the whole idea about why they were kind of trading CP3, is when you rely on this older roster to get through series after
100 games
after series, guys like PJ Tucker are going to start to wear down, and they're really important. And so I just don't think they're going to be able to withstand what the regular season the toll the regular season takes on their bodies. Now they're doing it. They're trying to manage Russ, but by trying to manage Russ, they're playing Harden ridiculous amounts. And it just, I think it's just too much. They're just not a deep enough team. And, you know, when they transitioned ownership and they were talking about how, you know, the number one goal was to be, you know, trying to bring a championship, they made a bunch of decisions that financially did not seem to line up with that. And I think that's going to hurt them.
I think maybe they could play Isaiah Hartenstein had a pretty
He's played great. Weekend. He's played great.
But
He's
I think if they could fit him into the rotation and then maybe dial back Tucker from
They got to dial back Tucker.
Yeah, because we laugh about his usage rate being 9 and single digits all the time, but he definitely exerts a lot of energy on defense.
Yep.
Especially at the pace they're playing. They're playing at 104 pace with him on the floor, so – you know, that's adding basically another couple minutes to his game. So, yeah, I'm with you. But I think that they'll be able to figure it out. You know, we still got a ways to go. But, man, just real quick before we finish this list, that 4-5 matchup is for the first round is going to be rough.
It's going to be very hard.
The 4-5-3-6 in the West is going to be great.
Well, I think Dallas has cooled off a little bit. Like we thought – they're for sure the 6.
It'll still be very fun.
Yeah, I guess Porzingis being hurt is part of that.
Yeah.
But. Okay, so where are we at here? We're at six teams.
Yeah.
So I have two more that I think can win. And it's gonna be so hard. Drew is gonna say no, but he's not gonna want to. And my logic here is this would require a trade. It would require them to make a win now move, but it would be the Dallas Mavericks.
No.
And the Miami Heat. I think the Miami Heat roster is good enough, and I think they have the best coach.
You left off two teams that I would put ahead of those two teams. Yeah, that I would also say
Denver and Utah.
Yeah,
Utah's playing Denver and Utah right now.
I think Utah.
Denver
has more
and Utah
paths.
Do not have the star power.
I think Utah has more paths, but I'd still say no on those teams.
I think it's possible. I guess you and I define possible as different.
I think in the
I'm like, saying this, I'm saying these single, are like.
If this was a single elimination tournament, I would say yes. The series,
I think Utah's defense is going to be really good. Ingles playing well has been big. I'm a big Royce O'Neal guy. Gobert has been playing lights out. Just awesome.
I think Utah is more real than Houston. I think Utah is more real than Denver. Utah is the first team that I'd have on the iffy list. Yeah.
No way.
That I would lean out. Yeah.
This is such a basketball hipster take, dude. No, because Houston is just better than Utah. Houston is a better basketball team than the Utah Jazz.
I don't know about that.
No, they have a better basketball player than the
Utah. Dink, you can get very good odds on Utah bets right now if you believe that to be true. Good Utah bets.
This was what was it? Was it Utah OKC last year? Was that the first round playoff series?
I can't. Yeah, I'm not talking about this with you.
Like that was like last year's playoff series, like I've done this before. I'll do it again. Like, yeah, and Utah's better this year.
Conley's been.
Why would you bring up that playoff series? So these are the numbers you can get on Utah right now. That you can get them at plus money to win the division, so to beat out Denver. You can get them at 20-1 to win the NBA championship. You can get them at 11-1 to win the conference. Like there are so many good Utah numbers out there. I think
plus money to win the division is good.
Yeah, I think
they're better than Denver.
You guys both think that's good?
Yes. Yeah, I like that.
All right, I'm going to bet it right now.
Yeah. I think
so. That's, right. We
so Utah.
We purchased that ticket.
9 and 10, or did we say we said my is Toronto?
I got to 8. I think much like the Jazz. I think that the Raptors are super good, but probably don't have the star power to do it without Kawhi.
I think of the Raptors honestly a lot like Houston, in the sense that and maybe these injuries preserve some of these guys, but they're just playing these guys way too much.
It's insane. And they're playing in playoff rotation minutes already.
Yeah. And that's going to take its toll over the course of the regular season. And Miami, I think, will have a little bit of the same thing. Like, I love Miami, but I think they're probably going to do the Denver thing where they probably overextend themselves a little bit in the regular season chasing seeding, and then they run into a little bit of a wall in the playoffs. But I would say Miami, I would take
Do you think Utah – I think Utah has a better odds than Miami does.
I agree.
Okay.
See, I think Miami – I like Miami better than you guys. I think they have a lot of really good
odds. We love Miami.
Well, so when I say that, I'm thinking in the context of how good are they, not what is their path. Like, the Miami path would be easier than the Utah path. So in terms of odds for betting, the Miami – odds might make more sense, but Utah I think is a better team than Miami, clearly.
Yeah.
I think Miami's better than Boston, though.
Yeah, I think in a series I'd probably take Miami, assuming health and everything.
I think I'd take
Miami. Like we said, they're Bam will exploit their interior.
Yeah, the challenge is the Stevens factor, like giving Stevens a series to figure out your tendencies and whatnot. But I think I would take Miami as the third best team to get out of the East in terms of my estimation, behind Milwaukee is a clear one and Philadelphia is a clear two.
Yeah. So I'm pretty much on the same page. But after those guys.
I cannot believe this Houston Rockets slander. And yeah, I don't even like the Rockets.
I think you got my back. I think, like I said, Hartenstein playing a little bit better has been big. Ben McLemore playing better has been huge. Daniel House not playing well has been a downer. Eric Gordon's terrible, but
yeah, that's been the big problem. That has been the big problem this year.
So if he shoots the ball better,
I think that's the thing. Like Eric Gordon was a very good player the last few years, and especially on the defensive side of the ball, he played very well in the playoffs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he was saying in the preseason, like, "Oh, I wanted to be the number one ball defender." Like, okay, yeah. Now.
Yeah, him not playing well has been a big problem.
I think they're clearly the fifth best team in the West if we're picking playoff odds. Like, not even close. They're not in. So I guess that's probably what.
Yes.
Saying, yeah. Like, they're not in that class.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I don't think Dallas is close to them right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But there's a pretty big gap there.
I mean, the huge gap is after two in the West. It's, you know, Lakers, Clippers, then a big gap.
See, I don't know. Apparently, I'm higher on Utah than you are.
I think Utah's
really good, man.
Utah's had the same problem for like 8 years, which is just that they just don't have anyone to go get buckets when it matters.
Donovan's been way more efficient this year.
Donovan Mitchell's been way better this year.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's the big difference for them.
Yeah. Mike can play halfway decent. If Conley could play like he did after the break last year, they're going to be tough, man.
That's the X factor for them is Conley. But so you have it Lakers Clippers as a tier, or you have the Jazz in that tier?
Yeah, I think that the gap from Lakers Clippers to Jazz is smaller than the
Jazz to the Houston.
The Houston to the rest of those guys.
Okay. Okay.
But yeah.
There you have it.
All right, Drew, this is your Miami
big gap, Philly big gap again, and then the rest, Miami, and then so on. Like, I think Miami Boston's pretty close.
Yes,
but it's gonna be tough for them to win a series.
I think Miami Boston Toronto is pretty close. I think those teams are.
I don't think Toronto.
I think Toronto will fade because of the health aspect. Yeah. But I think it's a gap after that. I think Indiana, you know, we just don't know where we're gonna get from
old people. Oh man, they're not. They're probably gets. I think they make it sweat, man. We'll see what. But Oladipo coming back in the 29th. That should be. I talked about this on my pod on Friday. I don't know what we're gonna get out of Oladipo, man.
No idea.
Steal rate dropped way bad last year. He wasn't really nearly as good as on defense. He was hurt most of the last season.
He's a guy that depends a lot on athleticism.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, no idea what we're going to get from him.
Yep.
Do you want all to right, talk Drew, to this is your chance to tilt your waivers.
So all right. So we started off back when I did this podcast regularly and talked about how bad my team was all the time. I have salvaged this team into fourth place in the league and like outside chance of cashing in the 12-team league. And I've done it through working the waiver wire. But three out of the last 4 weeks in a 12-team league with a $1,000 fab, I have tied on a bid and lost the tiebreaker because the team is below me in the standings. 3 out of 4 weeks. The mathematical odds of tying on fab waivers when you get one period during the whole week to make acquisitions. The first one was on Swatter Boy, Chris Boucher, at a $47.
How many dollars bid. Are we talking about here? Because if it's like $1 or $2, then obviously that's
right. Exactly. Way higher so up. Yeah. Chris Boucher, $47 bid, tied, okay. Lost.
Wow. Okay.
Then week off, no tie bids. Last week, my tie bid was Jordan McRae, $36, tied bid.
Wow. That's crazy.
Then this week, last night, I looked after 10 when waivers had run, and I was like, oh, the winning bid on Daniel Gafford, $27. And I was like, wait a second, I bid $27. And I see runner-up bid $27, and I lost again. So wow. 3 out of the last 4 weeks, 3 different bid dollar numbers, I've lost.
That's on ties. That's, yeah, the math, that's like you said, that's...
I am so shook now that...
How much money do you have left in your fab right now?
I have $402 left.
Wow. Yeah.
And I feel like totally shook because I feel like I'm just going to have to like start like mind gaming, leveling up and being like, all right, I got to add like $4 on everybody.
Yep. I hate that. I kind of don't like fab sometimes.
It's so maddening. Reason. And then like my next win on whoever I get, like last night I got Mikal Bridges instead and I spent like $12 on him and no one bid on him. And yeah. I'm not winning any close bids and I'm tying all the close bids and I'm just tilting myself. Because like the Jordan McRae week from last week would have been monstrous.
Oh my God, yeah.
You mean McMichael Jordan McRae?
Instead I have
Orange Mamba.
Like, instead, I had like a Derek White week in there or something. It was, it's just so frustrating. And this week, instead of Gafford, I'm going to have Bridges. And the Bulls have like 3-4 game weeks in a row. Yeah. So, yeah. So I'm tilting heavily on these tied bids. I don't know. And the thing that's also frustrating is I would hope that when you tie a bid, your like priority shifts up. But it doesn't, because the standings just keep the priority every week. So because I'm like fourth in the league, there's only 3 teams I can tie with and actually win a bid. And I keep tying with these losers, these 10th place teams that are somehow matching my exact bid. And
is it the same person? Has it been two of the
same? Same person got two of the guys.
Wow.
A different person for the third. When the same person got two of the guys, I looked at the third and I was like, I swear to God, if it's the third, I'm like changing all my passwords. I'm like freaking out. I've been hacked. Yeah. So, yeah, it has been a very tilting experience. But Leonie and I are up to fourth place and 13th in the overall in this NFBKC. The top 3 teams in our league are 1 through 3 in the overall.
Oh, wow.
Very tilting.
Yeah. Well, you have Harden on that team, right?
Have Harden.
Yeah.
So that, you know, all that tilting about Harden for instead of Karl Anthony Towns, you know, that's really, you know, it's kind of come around. It's
oh, my
come
God.
Around really nicely. And then I picked up Gorgui Dieng off waivers. So I basically have Towns from the second round. I have Jaren Jackson on that team. Just got Siakam back. Need Paul George and Favors to stay healthy. But got Christian Wood. Got the Anthony Melton. I've worked this waiver wire hard, Mike. Like I'm ready to
good,
go.
It's a good team.
I'm ready to go. Chris got Dunn plenty, has been
plenty
a
of time to make up some ground.
Yeah. So, but I got to stop tying on these bids. It's
really tough. I'm usually laying the weeds for fab. And then when it's somebody I want, I just go ridiculous. I've posted – so when Rashawn Holmes was, like, finally starting to come up, I spent 60% of my fab on him. Like, it's just – I don't know. That's how I – even for football, too. Like, if I see somebody I want
– Like, I think that's the way to do it. I just have been slower to react on those guys. Yeah. And in these NFBKC leagues, they're kind of a little bit deeper leagues on the whole.
Yeah.
Those types of guys aren't around. So, like, I got kind of lucky where I was streaming Chris Dunn. And then I was like, oh, man, Chris Dunn's playing really well.
Yeah, Dunn's good. You get a guy off the waiver wire who's like top 100 or so. That's a huge one.
So I was like, I'm going to hold on to him. And then I've just been taking shots on like DeAnthony Melton, Christian Wood, Jakob Poeltl, just like kind of guys that I'm kind of hoping that the situations break right and there's opportunities while like streaming a spot or two. But you got to have the good luck of health to do that. Once you have a few guys get injured, you got to start releasing some of these guys you're holding on to back in the wild, and that's when it gets risky.
Yep.
So fortunately, like, my team started off very injured to start the year, but we've been relatively healthy the last few weeks.
I've kind of got the reverse of that. My teams were really healthy, and all of a sudden, I had, like I said, probably one of the worst things I've ever had. I think I lost, like, all 7-2s. Like, it was so bad.
Yeah, it is amazing how well you – like, how much health plays a role in how well your season is going in season-long fantasy. Because, like, you'll think, like, oh, I've got this great team, and you'll realize – my team's just been healthier than everybody else.
Yep, that's what it is.
And then once the injuries find you, it's like, my team's terrible. What's happening? And you're like, oh, wait, yeah, I'm without, like, my first three picks. Like, of course my team's going to be bad.
Yeah, I had, like, six guys who were, like, six of my top 10 guys who all had the injury tag on Yahoo. I was like, well, I'm losing this week. Let me just try to win blocks and try to win a percentage category. Maybe go 6-3.
Yeah, exactly.
How fun for you, Drew? Are you gonna cash this league?
We're trying so hard to min cash. So hard.
Is it full season, season roto?
Yeah, it's full season roto. Yeah.
Okay. So, we're
8 points back of second and third. But those two teams are pretty good. And we've kind of capped out the categories we're good at. My teams, I never draft teams that are good at points or rebounds. Like, my teams are always good at steals, blocks, threes.
Yep.
So I just don't. So, like, I kind of – what I hope happens usually in points and rebounds is the teams at the bottom of the league, they stop paying attention. Nice. And then I get a free few points at the end of the year. But I'm going to need all of those this year.
Yep. Easiest category, scuff the waiver wire.
Yeah.
There we go. All right, last thing I want to talk about, Lakers rotations. No Anthony Davis. Are we seeing anything super relevant to our stuff other than LeBron James is still a god, Drew?
Well, how about that Thunder game, Davis? Because you've been big on the Lakers being the favorite over the Clippers, and Mike and I have been on the Clippers in that Thunder game.
You guys are wrong. It's just that Oklahoma City is better than we all thought.
No, where the Lakers were without LeBron and AD, and they went in there and put up 41 in the first quarter against the Thunder and then beat them by 15 with a starting lineup of Kuzma, Rondo, Caldwell Pope, Bradley, and McGee. Like,
dude, Kuzma is sick of everyone slandering him on Twitter. He saw everyone making fun of his hair. Everyone was making fun of the fact that Lonzo wouldn't talk to him after the game. People were saying that Bogdan Bogdanovich is a clearly better player. And he read all of your tweets and he was like, you know what? I'm actually not interested in any of this. This is bullshit.
I'm putting up, 15 of 24, 4 for 6 from 3 that game, scored 36, was a plus 20. Rondo went 21-12-8, turned the back Rondo the clock.
Yeah.
Wasn't even a national TV game, so who knew he had that in him?
Exactly.
So
Rajon Rondo on national TV is one of the most unassailable narratives in the history of fantasy sports.
It's incredible, but this wasn't even that. So I don't know. I mean, because my big thing has always been with the Lakers that I question their depth and I question the toll that the regular season would have on LeBron James and Anthony Davis compared to Clippers guys. And here they've gone through some injuries and their depth is playing quite well. So, like, I think if you're in that was without Danny Green, too, who is one of the guys that I think is pretty good.
He's their third best player, right? That's what everyone
says. So, you know, kudos to the Lakers role players. They're keeping the ship moving in the right direction and keeping that number one seed. I'm still skeptical. It doesn't change my mind. Maybe I'm slow to the take here, but it's been impressive how they've been able to play without LeBron and without Anthony Davis. And when they have one of the two, obviously, you know, the other guy shines with what they are. It's absurd that LeBron is still doing what he's doing. Totally ridiculous. Like, totally ridiculous that at this age, after this many miles on the tires, that he is putting up this kind of production that is, like, legitimate MVP-level production. I don't think he's going to win the award, but it's certainly in the conversation. And he's doing this while every game that he gets announced on a national television game, the broadcasters are talking about how, you know, he's going to be trying to hang around to play with his son in a few years. And he's playing at, like, an MVP level. Like, it's insane at age 35, having played over 1,200 games in the NBA, to keep doing this.
Yeah, it's serious. Like, I don't think we'll ever see this again. I mean,
by the way, do you guys know how many minutes per game LeBron has averaged for his career? Averaged
36.
Davis?
I mean, it's got to be 35.
He's averaged Price is Right rules. 38 and a half minutes per game.
Wow.
That's so absurd.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because he had that crazy 40 stretch.
His first 8 years in the league, he averaged over 40 minutes per game.
Yeah. Craziness.
That dude's crazy.
Yeah. Even still, I mean,
he is a Terminator. He is a freaking Terminator. He's
still playing 35 a game.
Yeah. And, 38 and a half minutes per game. Like, this is Tibbs level Jimmy Butler stuff. He's done it for what? 16 years now? 17 years?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And I'll add his per 36 without AD is 32.99, 36 usage rate, just ridiculous numbers. They're even plus 12.4 with AD and then plus 12.2 without AD. So, like, really no drop off. Where the other way around, AD without LeBron isn't really very good. So, yeah, this is just LeBron's just insane. So, I'm with you. I still think, again, we're assuming health. I still think the Clippers have a better chance to win. But I'm definitely on the fence. Sounds like you are too.
Yeah, I mean, I think their reserves are holding up better than I anticipated. Guys are playing well, and LeBron is holding. I mean, I cannot believe there's still no drop off in this guy's game.
Yeah, he's playing better than he did last year for sure.
Yeah, because he's trying on the defensive end as well. Sure. Just remarkable. I mean, I think it's one of those things where you start to take for granted the consistency of the production and the greatness. But my God, 17 seasons at 38 and a half minutes per game, averaging 27, 7 and 7. And this year averaging 25, 8 and 10.
Like, and kind of the playoff games too. Like, it's ridiculous. Yeah.
Best player ever. Better than Michael Jordan. Everyone, thank you for listening to the podcast.